Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Today is the, I don't know how many years, but 59? Thank you, Sean. Sean, you're so good at this stuff. Yes. Today is the 59th anniversary, sadly, of the assassination of President John Fitzgerald Kennedy. And I've got a couple of other stories I'm going to get to here in a few minutes, about Herschel Walker promoting transgender hate and Kanye West and his anti-Semitic tweets. But first, I just wanted to remind us all a little bit about John F. Kennedy and do so with a speech that he gave at Michigan State University on the 10th of June, 1963. And he was talking about peace. I think this is just one of his most brilliant speeches. I'm going to give it to you in pieces.
I have therefore chosen this time and place to discuss a topic on which ignorance too often abounds and the truth too rarely perceived. And that is the most important topic on earth, peace.
It's a pretty important topic.
What kind of a peace do I mean and what kind of a peace do we seek? Not a Pax Americana, enforced on the world by American weapons of war. Not the peace of the grave or the security of the slave. I am talking about genuine peace, the kind of peace that makes life on earth worth living, the kind that enables men and nations to grow and to hope and build a better life for their children. Not merely peace for Americans, but peace for all men and women, not merely peace in our time, but peace in all time.
This was such an idealistic time, you know?
I speak of peace, therefore, as the necessary rational end of rational men. I realize the pursuit of peace is not as dramatic as the pursuit of war, and frequently the words of the pursuers fall on deaf ears. But we have no more urgent task.
And I think he was sincere about this, absolutely meant it.
No government or social system is so evil that its people must be considered as lacking in virtue.
Something we need to remember.
Our military forces are committed to peace and disciplined in self-restraint. Our diplomats are instructed to avoid unnecessary irritants and purely rhetorical hostility. For we can seek a relaxation of tensions without relaxing our guard. And for our part, we do not need to use threats to prove we are resolute.
And here we are again in Ukraine.
Meanwhile, we seek to strengthen the United Nations to help solve its financial problems, to make it a more effective instrument for peace, to develop it into a genuine world security system, a system capable of resolving disputes on the basis of law, of ensuring the security of the large and the small, and of creating conditions under which arms can finally be abolished.
Abolishing arms.
The United States, as the world knows, will never start a war. We do not want a war. We do not now expect a war. This generation of Americans has already had enough, more than enough, of war and hate and oppression.
Now, of course, it was before George W. Bush.
We shall be prepared if others wish it. We shall be alert to try to stop it. But we shall also do our part to build a world of peace where the weak are safe and the strong are just. We are not helpless before that task or hopeless of its success. Confident and unafraid, we must labor on, not towards a strategy of annihilation, but towards a strategy of peace.
Isn't that extraordinary? I mean, it's bringing tears to my eyes. It's what we lost on this day 59 years ago was just extraordinary. Well, while President Kennedy and many statespeople, statesmen and women over the years have been have done what they can to try to promote peace and bring about peace and ensure peace, and so far, you know, it's been a long time since we've had nuclear weapons being used, although we were the only country to do so. But while many of us are promoting peace, there are still politicians who view war overseas, who view war within our own country, who view civil war in our own country, who view hatred of one group of Americans against the other, which is, you know, clearly the antithesis of peace, as a useful tool or weapon to achieve and hold political power. And, recently now we've got, I mean, this is just where this has ended up. First of all, it looks like the deranged mass, I shouldn't even call him deranged, the terrorist mass murderer in Colorado City was the grandson of GOP insurrectionist and California Assemblyman Randy Vopel from Santee, California. It's being reported over at Daily Edge on Twitter. Unprecedented is a newsletter that it's called the Daily Edge, actually, and so the headline is Unprecedented, that is available over on Substack, to which I subscribe. And the author of this, Richard Hine, notes that the seed, in his opinion, the seed of this mass slaughter at the Q Club was planted after the 30 November 2021 Oxford High School shooting that killed four in Michigan. That's when Colorado Congresswoman Lauren Boebert decided to release a family Christmas card that had more in common with jihadist recruitment propaganda than shepherds watching their flocks by night. And she tweeted out a picture of herself and her four children, or maybe it's five, four boys, each one holding an assault weapon. He goes on to say, or maybe it was one of the 12 times that Representative Boebert actively stoked LGBTQ violence, propelling her to the number three spot on the LGBTQ nation's top 10 list of the most hateful people on Twitter. Following passage of Florida's Don't Say Gay bill, which took effect on July 1st, he notes, anti-LGBTQ grooming rhetoric, that is, people trying to groom terrorists to kill queer people, Anti-LGBTQ grooming rhetoric surged a whopping 406% online. This is following Ron DeSantis' Don't Say Gay law. For an average of 6,607 tweets a day, a huge increase from the 1,300 tweets the month before. Marjorie Taylor Greene, he writes, was top of the list of hateful tweeters. Christina Pushaw, press secretary to Republican Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, finished in sixth place. Tweets from the top 10, anti-LGBTQ tweeters, the hate tweeters, tweets from the top 10 posters were viewed an estimated 48 million times and were responsible for driving the grooming narrative, according to a fairly comprehensive research group that has been digging into this stuff. And so here we are. As transgender author Jenny Boylan wrote in the Washington Post, quote, in October, a man attacked a trans librarian in Boise. Other attacks by armed men and groups such as the Proud Boys have disrupted drag-related events in Texas, Nevada, and Oregon. At the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, where I once presented a Grand Rounds lecture on the variety of trans experiences, security has been increased in the wake of threats to its transgender clinic. In Massachusetts, Boston Children's Hospital reports that its clinicians and staff have received multiple threats of violence. Pete Buttigieg, our Secretary of Transportation, himself a gay man, tweeted yesterday, if you're a politician or media figure who sets up the LGBTQ community to be hated and feared, not because of any of us ever harmed you, but because you find it useful, then don't you dare act surprised when this kind of violence follows. Don't you dare act surprised. Lauren Boebert tweeted, this is absolutely awful, and the victims and their families are in my prayers. And AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, responded on Twitter saying, Lauren Boebert, you have played a major role in elevating anti-LGBTQ plus hate rhetoric and anti-trans lies while spending your time in Congress blocking even the most common sense gun safety laws. You don't get to thoughts and prayers your way out of this. Look inward and change. Good advice. Good advice. And now we discover that anti-Semitism actually sells pretty good over on Twitter. I'll tell you about that on the other side of the break, and we'll pick up your phone calls. Whew. Speaking the truth, the multinational corporations would really rather you didn't know all about it. I'll be right back. All right, James in Washington, D.C. It says you disagree with me, James. Why? What's up?
Well, Tom, I was going to switch gears. You know, I was really impressed with that Kennedy speech. I think, you know, I was going to talk about, you know, quit demonizing everybody. And I'm talking about politicians. It starts with Congress, and you see it in the media, constantly attributing motives of hate and prejudice. And, of course, we call you guys communists, et cetera, groomers. But let's not talk about that. Let's go right to the peace issue. Nothing more important. We've got to do something about this war in Ukraine. We've got to stop.
Stop,
you know,
what?
Edwards Webb, AOC, and
stop.
Ileana,
stop what, James?
Omar. Excuse me?
Stop what?
You know, we've got to stop
supporting Ukraine?
We've got to stop supporting the escalation of this war because we know where it's headed.
Ukraine is not escalating this war, James. If Russia stopped attacking, the war would be over.
Well, go back to 2014. Go back to Victoria Nuland. Go back to the color revolution. Go back to Donbass being shelled by American arms being sent there.
Go back to Vladimir Putin's speech saying that Ukraine doesn't exist as an actual country, that it's part of Russia, that he's going to take it back. Go back to his invasion, of Crimea. Come on, James, don't call my program and just spout pro-Russian propaganda and think you're going to get away with it. And don't try to talk over me either. You know, it's like enough already. Let me just go back and flag James as. I originally noted he was a conservative. I love having conversations with rational conservatives, but this guy's a Putin troll, and so I'll note that. Thank you very much. All right, picking up your phone calls, Jim in Austin, Texas. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind?
Well, Tom, wow, that was something to go through. I have called on the issue of Medicare disadvantage, but Because you mentioned that, because this is November, I was in Dallas that day.
Wow.
And more to the point, I was living there. Less than a month before, I was at the speech that the ambassador to the United Nations made, that would be Adlai Stevenson, mm-hmm. and observed him being attacked by a vicious mob in Dallas. And as you know, I'm sure he warned Kennedy not to come to Dallas.
Yeah, well, they hated they hated Kennedy down there. I mean, you know.
They really attacked him and tried to hit him with signs and spit on Stevenson. So it is not it's not like things have changed, or, you know, 50 years has made a difference. There were people that were violent.
Oh, and it was the oil Hunt brothers back then funding it. You know, now it's other oil billionaires.
Yeah, at that point, the big selling book in town there was Alpaca by H.L. Hunt.
Yep.
The thesis of the book being that those who have the most money get the most votes.
Yep.
But that's not what I called about. I called about the Medicare disadvantage. You'd asked me to call back after I had attended some meetings, and I see the music's coming up, so
I would like to
discuss that with you. Well, I explain basically what's going on. There is a question of skin in the game and muddying the waters to make them appear deep. At these meetings where they try to sell it, they confuse people and make them think that Medicare is complicated
and
then sell programs.
Yeah. No, Jim, I'm sorry we're out of time, but I got it. Thank you.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back. So Kanye West, he was let back on Twitter, and of course, you know, it's now turning into right-wing troll heaven, I guess. It's interesting. Somebody posted, am I losing Twitter followers because I've been taking on Elon Musk or something like that? And I replied, pointing out that we've been losing Twitter followers ever since this transfer happened. It's really strange. We were at 198 or 199,000 Twitter followers, and I had sent a note to Nigel, who runs our websites and stuff. He's our webmaster, saying that we need to update our profile on our homepage, which has how many followers we have on YouTube and Twitter and all that stuff. And it's a year old, the statistics. And I said, you know, but let's wait until we hit 200,000, which I think will happen any day now because we're at like 199,000. Well, in the last couple of weeks, we're down to 195,000. Now, I'm not complaining. I mean, you know, it may well be that they're cleaning up the bots, which is something Elon said he was going to do. And if that's the case, then I salute that. On the other hand, it may be that, you know, 5,000 people have just decided to leave Twitter and cancel their accounts. I just don't know. But anyhow, stuff on Twitter is happening, and Kanye West was let back on Twitter. And, of course, his first tweet was shalom, which is a Hebrew word, you know, peace or hello and goodbye also, casually, and with a smiley face. And the Combat Anti-Semitism Movement, CAM, and the Contagion Research Institute, National Contagion Research Institute, NCRI, these are two groups that do analysis on basically the virality of memes, of ideas, things. And the one, the second one, the Combat Anti-Semitism Movement, of course, focusing on anti-Semitism. And they found what they called the anti-Semitism attention economy. And they found that recent controversial social media posts by Kanye West metastasized populist Jew hating across the ideological spectrum, from white supremacists to black Hebrew Israelites. And one of the people who works with the CEO of CAM, Sasha Reutemann, Dratwa, said, quote, "This episode is sadly indicative of what Jews face in a world of increasing anti-Semitism online." First, and what he's talking about is the problem. I mean, you know, with all these anti-Semitic posts, if you respond to them, if you call them out, if you point them out, you are amplifying them. If you don't respond to them, you're allowing them to fester and grow and causing people who read them to tacitly assume that maybe there's truth to them, or this is acceptable, you know, discourse in polite company, et cetera. So anyhow, he goes, firstly, rather than those involved in anti-Semitism being shunned, their popularity frequently increases, and they are made a martyr when they're called out on spreading lies and hatred. And it turns out that Kanye West tweeting anti-Semitism has actually, rather significantly apparently, increased his social media following, which tells you that, you know, there is an ongoing market for hate. And it's alive and well on social media in the United States. And social media is not policing itself the way it should, particularly the big two, you know, Facebook and Twitter. And whether it's hate on the queer community, whether it's hate on the blacks, whether it's hate on Hispanics or immigrants, whether it's hate on Jews, whether it's hate on Muslims, it's just fundamentally wrong. I have another thought on peace for you, and I'll pick up your phone calls on the other side of this break. I played the Kennedy clips on peace, A, because it's one of my favorite of his speeches, and B, because today is the 59th anniversary of his assassination in Dallas. But his speech on peace reminded me of the president who preceded John Kennedy, which was Dwight Eisenhower, who was a Republican, who campaigned on increasing Social Security, who campaigned and bragged about frequently on how he had expanded the number of people who had good union jobs, and who, having been the general who oversaw the war in Europe, World War II, he was the supreme Allied commander, General Eisenhower, and saw his share of death and carnage, and ordered men into the maw, you know, into the machine guns of the Germans, Normandy and all that sort of stuff. I mean, this is Eisenhower's thing. This is what he did. Was a man who really understood the horrors of war and did not want it to continue under his presidency. Dwight Eisenhower was also a friend of Jack Kennedy's. And in early January, I believe this was January 19th, I could be wrong on the exact date, but in early January, Dwight Eisenhower sat down and gave a farewell address to the nation as he was peacefully handing power over to the incoming Democrat, John Kennedy. And I just wanted to play about 2 minutes of his, which is basically the ending part. This is the speech in which he famously said, "We must beware of the military-industrial complex." I'll tell you that to begin with. I'm not going to play that part because it's just so famous and everybody knows it. But this part really touches me, and I think it's just so important. So here, this is President Dwight Eisenhower when he was still president, as he was, you know, on his way out.
"As we peer into society's future, we, you and I, and our government must avoid the impulse to live only for today, plundering for our own ease and convenience the precious resources of tomorrow. We cannot mortgage the material assets of our grandchildren without risking the loss also of their political and spiritual heritage. We want democracy to survive for all generations to come, not to become the insolvent phantom of tomorrow.
And, of course, that's what Reagan did. I mean, cutting taxes and everything. But anyhow, here it continues.
During the long lane of the history yet to be written, America knows that this world of ours, ever growing smaller, must avoid becoming a community of dreadful fear and hate, and be instead a proud confederation of mutual trust and respect. Together we must learn how to compose differences, not with arms, but with intellect and decent purpose.
And then he ended his prayer, speech, with a prayer, literally a prayer.
May we be ever unswerving in devotion to principle, confident but humble with power, diligent in pursuit of the nation's great goals. To all the peoples of the world, I once more give expression to America's prayerful and continuing aspiration. We pray that peoples of all faiths, all races, all nations may have their great human needs satisfied, that those now denied opportunity shall come to enjoy it to the full, that all who yearn for freedom may experience its spiritual blessings. Those who have freedom will understand also its heavy responsibility, that all who are insensitive to the needs of others will learn charity, and that the scourges of poverty, disease, and ignorance will be made disappear from the earth, and that in the goodness of time, all peoples will come to live together in a peace guaranteed by the binding force of mutual respect and love.
And love. I mean, it's. I'm sorry. I shouldn't break up when I hear these old, you know, these idealistic times. Certainly there was an awful lot about that era to not be idealistic about. But anyhow, Bob in Detroit. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Yes, I wanted to add to your conversation about what the effect will be of possibly prosecuting Trump. And I tend to agree with your original take on it, which is that it may actually work to his benefit, you know, comparing it to what's going on with foreign politics and so on.
Short term, anyway. I mean, if he ends up in jail, it won't work to his benefit. But other than that, yes.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing. I mean, as it plays out, I think related to this is Trump's decision to make his announcement when he did. And by doing, because he was getting advice even from Republicans, oh, delay your announcement, delay it, you know, wait till after the Georgia runoff. And he said, no, I'm going ahead with it right now. So I think he's kind of, in a sense, beaten Merrick Garland to the punch. So from now on, anything that they do against Trump will look political. Like, oh, Trump announced for president. Now, look, they're just trying to tear him down.
Right. And we all saw that coming, by the way.
Right, but I think the effect of this politically will have a real effect on really impeding any such movements in that direction.
Movement? You mean prosecutions or politically?
Yes. Well, both.
Oh, I don't. I think the prosecution track is going to run on its very own timetable, its very own steam. It's going to be based on, you know, the facts and the witnesses and all that sort of thing. I don't think that Jack Smith or, I mean, Merrick Garland handing this thing off to Jack Smith, I was a brilliant stroke, in my opinion. And I think Trump is still.
Yeah, but well, okay, I guess I'm disagreeing with that because I think even your guest host last week mentioned this subject where that's very no former president has ever been prosecuted.
But we never had a former president who was a naked criminal.
Yeah, but it's not. It doesn't give a good impression.
You know, I realize there isn't a precedent other than arguably Nixon. I mean, you know, there was Leon Jaworski wanted to prosecute Nixon, but Jerry Ford pardoned him. I think lacking that pardon, he may well have. Bob, thanks for the call. We'll see. You know, we'll see how it shakes out. It's going to be interesting times. Get the popcorn. Clarence in Jacksonville, North Carolina says here you disagree with me, Clarence. I my apologies. If I'd caught that earlier, I would have put you on earlier. What's up?
Yes, sir. Mr. Hartman. Listening to your show, some of the people calling in and trying to stay focused, not get all too off track. Well, let's just think back for a minute. I am a Republican. I did vote for President Trump twice. And if he runs again and gets the nomination, Polly vote for him the third time. First question, and I'm going to go through this just quick and all. How in the world did our country get so divided? Democrat, Republicans had each other's votes, so on and so forth. I thought we were all for the better good of the USA. Second question.
Well, let's deal with these one at a time here, Clarence.
Okay. All right.
I think that your question is a really important one. And I don't have an easy or glib answer for you. I do think that the decision that Richard Nixon made, and I'm not just blaming Nixon for this, he was simply picking up the mantle from the Democrats before him. But the decision that Nixon made in 1968 to openly embrace a white racist vote in the South and take that away from the Democratic Party and do it, you know, explicitly, that sort of began the process. But I think the real crisis began in 1976 and 78 when the Supreme Court legalized political bribery. And at that point, you had some fossil fuel billionaires and other very, very wealthy people who started buying politicians. And what they found was that one of the most effective ways to rob all of us blind was to keep us fighting with each other. And so, you now have political systems, arguably with both parties, but I think most of it's on the right, that are basically devoted to ginning up hate and fear.
Well, that's where my divide differs. I feel absolutely the opposite. And I'm an over-road driver. I'm on the road right now, so I'm trying to concentrate not to run anybody over and all that stuff. But I feel just the opposite of what you just said there and all. And a lot of people do. And that was the first question off. The second question, and I appreciate your answer. It was a little complicated, and I will look at something a little bit more direct.
Well, Clarence, before we move to the second question, let me just ask you. You know, you listen to conservative media a lot, and I'm sure that you're hearing a lot of outrage, right? You know, we need to be pissed off about this. We need to be pissed off about that. You know, this, quack, quack, quack. Are you hearing that on this program? Are you hearing that on this channel?
Sir, Mr. Hartman, I have to be honest. I was channel surfing and run across it and paused onto it and all. I like to educate myself on both sides.
Okay. All right. So your second question.
I said I voted for Trump. Yeah. Trump could lose my vote. I'm for the good of the country, period. That's what it is. We're all one nation under God.
By the way, Clarence, we just have a minute left before the hour is going to end here, so let's get to it.
Yes, sir. I'll be right quick. Yes, sir. The second question is, back when Donald Trump come down the escalator, they started investigating Mr. Trump.
They did?
They did. They investigated. Mueller report. Congress, two impeachments, you name it.
Oh, all that stuff came quite a ways down the road. But you're absolutely right about the, Marco Rubio hired the what became that Steele dossier. He hired the Steele people as opposition research in the Republican primary. And then when Marco Rubio lost the Republican primary, the Hillary Clinton campaign bought that from his campaign. But, you know, that happens to every politician. You know, as soon as you declare,
well,
somebody else is doing oppo research.
Yeah.
Look it up.
Well,
it's true.
I can't deny it because I don't know. I have noticed on your show you're dealing with a lot of speculations. And
well, this is not speculation. This is easily documented.
Biden,
Clarence,
what did Biden's Reduction Act do to the consumer?
The Inflation Reduction Act?
Come back in. Yes, sir. It wasn't fuel. It wasn't food prices. What did we do?
That's a good question. I don't have a, we're out of time, Clarence. I don't have a quick answer for you, Clarence. So let me think about that one. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
For our caller, Clarence, I want to tell you about the Inflation Reduction Act and AARP and private Medicare and Arizonans going into hiding. And welcome back. A lot to talk about. AARP, the David Sirota's newsletter, The Lever. This one is written by Matthew Cunningham Cook over at levernews.com, is writing about the American Association of Retired Persons. They no longer call themselves that. It's now AARP, but that's what they used to call themselves. And while Medicare Advantage is a ripoff of you and me, it costs our government more than $7 billion a year, more than normal Medicare would. And most of that money goes right into the pockets, much of that money goes right into the pockets of the CEOs and stockholders of these giant insurance companies, specifically $814 million a year in profits. But AARP is openly promoting Medicare Advantage. By the way, their CEO made $1.3 million last year, in 2020, the year before, yes, in 2020. They have 38 million members. And this is interesting. Quote, throughout the current public health emergency, we have supported the expansion of supplemental benefits in Medicare Advantage to help alleviate the unprecedented health care crisis brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic, writes a letter from AARP. Starting the Medicare Advantage part was added by The Lever, but if you look at the context, that was what they were talking about. The Lever notes, starting in 2021, AARP also launched a lucrative partnership with a major Medicare outsourcing firm, Oak Street Health, which is a participant in the ACO Realizing Equity Access and Community Health Program, also known as the ACO REACH Program, that privatizes Medicare benefits for seniors without their consent. AARP earned $814 million in royalties. That figure is double what they collect in dues. Their motto is to serve, not be served, but what they're serving is apparently Medicare Advantage. Susan Rogers, the president of Physicians for National Health Program, PNHP, pointed out that AARP's website contained essentially no information, no independent information on Medicare Advantage. Quote, if you go to their website and search for Medicare, the first information up there is Medicare Advantage, she said. Nothing about traditional Medicare. Nothing. And the ACO REACH program, of course, will throw you into a Medicare Advantage program without you even knowing it if your doctor is hooked up with one of these groups. So rough stuff. Clarence called, a truck driver called a little earlier and said, what's in the Inflation Reduction Act for average consumers? And so I said, I'll do a little homework here over the break. Number one, the expanded tax credits for energy efficient commercial buildings, energy efficient homes and electric vehicles will include bonus credits for businesses that pay prevailing wages and hire registered apprentices, ensuring local wages are not undercut by low-road contractors. In other words, it will increase wages across the country. It stops companies from ripping off workers. It penalizes companies that promise to pay prevailing wages but don't follow through. For the first time ever, the Inflation Reduction Act establishes Make It in America provisions for the use of American-made equipment. The law provides expanded clean energy tax credits for wind, solar, nuclear, clean hydrogen, clean fuels, and carbon capture. It makes the tax code fairer by cracking down on multimillionaires, billionaires, and corporations that evade their taxes. No family making less than $400,000 a year will see a tax increase. The Inflation Reduction Act will actually raise revenue for the federal government by going after tax dodgers, particularly wealthy individuals and giant corporations. It imposes a 1% surcharge on corporate stock buybacks to encourage businesses to invest in their people rather than in their CEOs and their shareholders. It will revitalize American manufacturing. It builds the American clean energy supply chains. It supports American workers with targeted tax incentives aimed at manufacturing. It strengthens America's manufacturing base, promotes domestic sourcing and American jobs. For example, clean energy tax credits are increased if the amount of American steel used in wind projects meets the domestic content threshold. Bonus credits are available to employers who use prevailing wages and apprenticeships. I kind of mentioned that before. And it creates good paying union jobs all across the United States. It also lowers health care costs. The Inflation Reduction Act will protect Medicare recipients from catastrophic drug costs by placing an out-of-pocket cap of $35 a month on insulin, and also allowing Medicare to negotiate for the first time since 2003, the Republicans got it passed that Medicare couldn't negotiate drug prices. Pretty sure it was 2003, might have been 2005. But for the first time now, on 10 drugs only, we want to expand that, Medicare can negotiate drug prices, which is going to lower prices for everybody, lower drug prices for everybody in the United States. So that's what the Inflation Reduction Act does for average people. I got to tell you about the GOP chairman of the Mayor County Board of Supervisors who has gone into hiding, and what's up with Disney, and then I'll pick up your calls.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So in Arizona, the Republican County Supervisor, Maricopa County Supervisor Bill Gates, no relation to the billionaires, billionaire, he's just the chair of the County Board of Supervisors, he has gone into hiding. Because apparently Carrie Lake, the loser, the Republican who lost the gubernatorial race in Arizona, has been yelling and screaming about election fraud. And he announced, he confirmed on Sunday, yesterday, that he was transferred to an undisclosed location. He's been provided, he and his family, with a security detail. And they have faced months, they say, of escalating death threats that make it increasingly difficult for them to do their job. The top lawyer for the county has also reported being threatened by an RNC attorney working with Lake's campaign. Not good. Not good stuff. Not good to know about. Meanwhile, over at Disney, Bob Chapek has been the president of Disney. Bob Iger was president before him. Bob Iger had been with the company 50 years, literally worked his way up to CEO. And he left 3 years ago with a giant golden parachute and was replaced by Chapek. But Chapek apparently made the mistake of going to war with Ron DeSantis over his Don't Say Gay law. And so now they're bringing back Bob Iger. And it, you know, this is, in fact, this was so sudden. Chapek was supposed to introduce some sort of football game or something. And everybody was expecting him to show up, and he didn't. And it's because Iger is now in charge. And he has said that he's agreed to serve for 2 years. Now, Chapek just got a three-year renewal of his contract. It's going to cost them apparently a couple $100 million to buy him out and make him go away, which is pretty mind-boggling when you think of it. You know, is anybody worth a couple $100 million a year or for 3 years? It's an enormous amount of money. Anyhow, let's pick up your phone calls here. Jules in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Jules, what's on your mind today?
Oh, fine. My compliment. I'm your biggest fan.
Well, thank you,
Jules. But anyway, to get to the point. I mean that, too. I had a relative, and this will be brief. I had a relative that seemed to always be able to get away with murder. Not literally, but some pretty wicked stuff. And I found out he belonged to a secret organization and that there was a sign that they flash. And I think that's what's happening with Merrick Garland is why he won't prosecute and then finally dumped it off on a special prosecutor.
Okay. And what's your relative's secret society?
I'd rather not say, please.
Okay. All right. I doubt it, frankly, Jules. There have been secret societies in American history. George Washington's inaugural parade was a Masonic parade. The Masons, each one of the Masonic temples came and brought their own little banners. I mean, we've got, we don't have photographs in the era, but we've got paintings and etchings of that and the historical record. There was a secret society that grew up in Massachusetts in the 1840s. It really started, but they really didn't gain power until the 1880s, as I recall. It was called the Order of the Star-Spangled Banner, and their slogan was "I Know Nothing," and they had a secret handshake, and they were called the Know Nothings, and they seized power over the state of Massachusetts for a couple of gubernatorial cycles. And played a huge role in generating public schools in Boston because they were trying to break the back of the Catholic political power in that state. And of course, you had the Ku Klux Klan, which arguably wasn't so secret, but it was a society that had a lot of political power. So, you know, your question's not, you know, a nutty one or a conspiracy, you know, theory one, but... That said, there was a time I speculated on the era whether Garland was even a member of the Federalist Society. Turns out he's not, never has been. So I don't think that there's that what we're looking at here is secret society stuff, you know, like you're describing, Jules. I think it's more that it takes time to build a criminal prosecution, particularly a large one, particularly something like, you know, espionage treason. And the Department of Justice has been working on this diligently. They've got a federal grand jury. And you know, when Trump announced that he was running for president and Biden said that he was going to run again, the imperative that Garland felt, and I believe this is true, I mean, I think when he said this, he was speaking the truth, was that he needed to depoliticize the effort. He needed to bring in a guy who was being seen as independent of politics. Now, you know, arguably that's what they did with Ken Starr when they went after Bill Clinton. Ken Starr was nakedly political. That's not the case with Jack Smith. Ken Starr was an old Republican, you know, operative. He was, you know, blatantly political. But I think that Jack Smith is going to be a serious guy, and he's going to take this on in a serious way. So, Jules, thanks for the call and thanks for the question. My short answer is no. I don't think there's anything having to do with secret societies here beyond, you know, just the normal, obvious societies of wealth and power that Donald Trump is able to wield. Earl in Hyde Park, Illinois. Hey, Earl, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Excuse my voice. It's kind of breaking up a little bit. I want to address Clarence again, but I'm going to answer your last question just before you came to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they really do believe that the price of whatever Trump brings to the table is worth maintaining the lifestyle that they envision is America. And I'm going to suggest to you that it's not only the Republicans, but it's also the liberals and the independents who have a false impression of how great America has been in the past. They don't take in consideration what has happened to the Native people. They don't take into consideration what has happened to Black people, Latino, brown people, those that don't consider themselves white, and Asian, and so on and so forth. They really believe that America was this great bastion of equality and goodness for everyone, and when it wasn't, you know, because I'm Black, I understand how heavy-handed it was on the Black people and people of poor poverty and everything else.
Good point, Earl. And you know, for a lot of white people, it's easy to just kind of live in this little white bubble and pretend that the rest of all that stuff isn't happening. But it has been happening. And of course, now you've got Republican politicians who are trying to make it illegal to even teach the actual history of the United States, which is just breathtaking. Earl, thank you for the call.
Hey, Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Our book today in the Tom Hartman Book Club is Revolutionary Love by Michael Lerner, a political manifesto to heal and transform the world. This is from the introduction. We Earthlings need to build a fundamental change of consciousness into ourselves and in every part of our national and global society in order to achieve the economic and political changes necessary to prevent the destruction of the life support system of Earth, in order to end global and domestic poverty and wealth inequality, to defeat racism, sexism, homophobia, and other forms of xenophobia, to protect human rights, to achieve social, economic, and environmental justice, and to achieve lasting global peace. This new consciousness is possible and can emerge through embracing revolutionary love, the struggle for a caring society, and a new bottom line in all our economic, political, legal, educational, and cultural institutions. This manifesto is written to show you how this can happen and how you can help make it possible. Liberal and progressive movements need to move beyond a focus on economic entitlements and political rights to embrace a new discourse of love, kindness, generosity, and awe. These are not some new agey smile and be nice formula or let's get into self-transformation before we change society kind of thinking. I'm calling for both our American and global societies to embrace a new bottom line so that every economic, political, societal, and cultural institution is considered efficient, rational, and/or productive, not according to the old bottom line of how much these institutions maximize money, power, or ego, but rather how much they maximize love and generosity, kindness and forgiveness, ethical and environmentally sustainable behavior, social and economic justice. This new bottom line seeks to enhance our capacity to transcend a narrow utilitarian or instrumental way of viewing human beings and nature, so that we respond to other people as embodiments of the sacred, instead of thinking of them primarily in terms of how much they can serve our interests. And also so that we can respond to nature not solely as a resource for human needs, but rather through awe, wonder, and radical amazement at the beauty and grandeur of this universe. I call this new consciousness revolutionary love, and its goal is to create the caring society, caring for each other and caring for the earth. The vehicle to create this new consciousness we will call the Love and Justice Movement, and eventually the Love and Justice Party. The revolutionary possibility of love is the kind of love that breaks through those distortions of consciousness that make it difficult to implement a national environmental policy or to end the many forms of oppression that permeate our world. To really embrace revolutionary love requires us to develop a strategy way beyond anything currently being given serious attention in the media, the political parties, and even many of the social change movements. And it requires us to move beyond what seems realistic in terms of the contemporary frame of discourse. Yet there is no alternative if we're to solve the environmental crisis and prevent our society in the coming decades from moving further and further into reactionary nationalism and repression of our own humanity. We need a global mobilization of billions of people to solve the problem, and this manifesto outlines the first steps to making possible such a mobilization. To understand the urgency, let's consider our current environmental crisis. In 1992, thousands of scientists issued a collective statement warning of the impending dangers to the life support system of planet Earth. 25 years later, in December 2017, 15,364 scientists from 184 countries signed a new statement that reads, in part, "Since 1992, with the exception of stabilizing the stratospheric ozone layer, humanity has failed to make sufficient progress in generally solving these unforeseen environmental changes. And alarmingly, most of them are getting far worse. Especially troubling is the current trajectory of potentially catastrophic climate change due to rising greenhouse gases from burning fossil fuels and agricultural production, particularly from farming ruminants for meat consumption. Moreover, we have unleashed a mass extinction event, the sixth in roughly 540 million years, wherein many current life forms could be annihilated, or at least committed to extinction by the end of this century. Humanity is now being given a second notice. We are jeopardizing our future by not reining in our intense but geologically and demographically uneven material consumption, and by not perceiving continued rapid population growth as a planetary driver behind many ecological and even societal threats. By failing to adequately limit population growth, reassess the role of an economy rooted in growth, reduce greenhouse gases, incentivize renewable energy, protect habitat, restore ecosystems, curb pollution, halt defaunation, and constrain invasive alien species, humanity is not taking the urgent steps needed to safeguard our imperiled biosphere." End of quote from the scientists. The book is Revolutionary Love by Rabbi Michael Lerner.
Ziggy in Oneonta, New York. Hey, Ziggy, how's nobribes.com doing?
Before I get to my topic, I wanted to just give you a little piece of trivia. Jack Smith went to college here at Oneonta State before he went to Harvard.
How about that?
Yeah, I thought that was kind of neat. You know, never met him, don't know of him. But
one boy makes good.
That was kind of neat. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyways, I'm calling you about this New York State gerrymandering that you were talking about. And I don't want to be part of a circular firing squad, but you got to call them like you see them. Our biggest problem is our New York State Democratic chairman, Jay Jacobs, is a lobbyist. And he hasn't really put any money into anything for us, especially the people. And he's basically lining his pockets, in my opinion.
Yeah, this is what I said earlier. The Democratic Party in New York State is probably the most corrupt Democratic Party in the country, at least as far as I can tell. I know in my dad's day, you know, he believed, I mean, he was an Eisenhower Republican. He believed an R after the name meant, you know, somebody who stood for something and you could trust what they had to say and all that kind of thing. But now we've got, after having a crotch grabber in the White House who, you know, proudly has been accused of assaulting over 20 women, has been sued over 3,000 times for refusing to pay his bills, and had his phony university shut down, had his phony charity shut down. All three of his children had to, under court order, had to go to school to learn how to run a charity in a way that's not fraudulent. I mean, he's been literally convicted of fraud. And now we're finding that his company has been engaged in massive tax fraud for decades. And this is the guy Republicans are saying, yeah, I like that. I maybe he won't be fraudulent against me. You know, I get, you know, that there are some white Republicans who think that, yeah, he's going to keep the black people in their place and keep the brown people out of the country. But, you know, really is having corruption being ripped off by this guy, the price that you're willing to pay for your white supremacy, really? It's incredible. Ziggy, thanks for the call, and good luck with nbribes.com. Thanks a lot for that. Okay. I have some of my favorite clips in here, and I'm trying to find this is a clip from Harry Truman. Be interesting to hear what he has to say.
People know the Democratic Party is the people's party, and the Republican Party is the party of special interest, and it always has been and always will be.
Okay, we got that. We got you, Harry. We definitely got you. And all right. This is FDR speaking about his economic Bill of Rights. And this was a big deal speech, actually.
"This republic had its beginning and grew to its present strength under the protection of certain inalienable political rights, among them the right of free speech, free press, free worship, trial by jury, freedom from unreasonable searches and seizures. They were our rights, life and liberty. We have come to a clearer realization of the fact, however, that true individual freedom cannot exist without economic security and independence.
You'll recall my rant was about what is freedom, right? And this is exactly what Franklin Roosevelt is talking about in this speech from 1940, I believe this is 1944, where he's talking about his economic Bill of Rights. So he's saying basically no freedom can exist without economic freedom. He continues.
Necessitous men are not free men. People who are hungry, people who are out of a job, are the stuff of which dictatorships are made. In our day, these economic truths have become accepted as self-evident. We have accepted, so to speak, a second Bill of Rights, under which a new basis of security and prosperity can be established for all, regardless of station or race or creed. Among these are the right to a useful and remunerative job in the industry.
This is the four, you know, these are his economic, not the Four Freedoms speech, his economic Bill of Rights speech, in which FDR is saying, this is what defines freedom, the right to a decent job.
Or shops, or farms, or mines of the nation. The right to earn enough to provide adequate food and clothing and recreation. The right of farmers to raise and sell their products at a return which will give them and their families a decent living.
At that time, more than half the country was agricultural.
The right of every businessman, large and small, to trade in an atmosphere of freedom from unfair competition and domination.
And the monopolies.
By monopolies at home or abroad. The right of every family to a decent home. The right to adequate medical care and the opportunity to achieve and enjoy good health. The right to adequate protection from the economic fear of old age and sickness and accident and unemployment. Finally, the right to a good education. All of these rights spell security. And after this war is won, we must be prepared to move forward to the implementation of these rights.
And he was so right, and we didn't do it, sadly. But anyway, thanks so much for being with us. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. And in the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires all of us. That includes you. So get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.